Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by BetOnline.ag, recapping all the things we saw NFL Week 5, looking ahead to tonight's Monday Night Football game between the Minnesota Vikings and the Chicago Bears. A special Monday show as we welcome in Bears insider of sorts, Tom Waddle from WMVP 1000, also known to cover the NFL for ESPN. Talk about some injuries, a little movie review, crow about our Bengals money line winner against the Buffalo Bills. But before we get to all that, we have to welcome in my esteemed co-host and colleague, the one, the only, Payne Insider. What's going on this morning, buddy?
Not too much. Big guest. I think this is the first guest we've had for Monday Night Football.
I think so. I mean, I believe the only one we've had in the past is Jeff Freeman of the AGA talking about more legalization issues than anything else. But Payne, before we even talk about football, there's a video that started to circulate all over social media late last night surrounding a member of the Miami Dolphins, and there was rampant speculation that you might have been the one holding the camera for Chris Forrester.
No, that's incorrect. I feel like you just need to play like the T-Pain sound. Maybe our producer can do that, just that I'm in love with a stripper song, and that pretty much just sums up what transpired there. I did see, out of the kindness of his heart, he resigned a few moments ago.
He did. He resigned earlier this morning, apparently to try and help the Dolphins organization out of a sticky spot, apparently.
It could have been Adderall.
It definitely could have been Adderall, but for those of us that have been around Adderall, I don't even know if it comes in a white powder anymore. I feel like it's like blue or orange these days.
Oh, is that? I don't know. I don't know how good the camera equipment on an iPhone is on Snapchat or whatever he used to send that. But I'm not an Adderall guy, but
I hear that the kids are squishing it up as opposed to taking the pill form.
I mean, hey, if it wasn't for Adderall, there's a good chance I might never have graduated from college. But
oh, there you go.
I digress completely, and thanks to the NESCAC drug enforcement or whatever they call it. There was no performance-enhancing drugs, and they don't really worry about Division III backup goaltenders in any capacity. As always, you can follow Payne on Twitter, at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well. And, of course, the podcast, Bet the Board Pod. Payne, from what you've told me, T-shirts flying off the shelves after a 2-0 weekend in the college and the NFL ranks?
Yeah, well, they were flying off the shelves before that, but yeah, we've had an increase in orders since the weekend, that's for sure.
It's always a good thing when you can use the man's money to buy yourself some gear and support
the mediums,
the podcast.
Shockingly, flying off the shelves. I mean, this whole perception that Americans are fat slobs, the mediums are going quicker than I expected. So if you're a medium, just kind of take a stroll through the McDonald's drive-thru and then order a size bigger.
Well, maybe the perception that sports bettors are all fat slobs. Apparently, we have a much more sophisticated and fitness-conscious listenership there that they want to stay in shape, or they're buying them for the ladies in their lives or loved ones or small children. I'm not really
they
sure
are that comfortable.
Our gear.
She will probably steal it from you, and then it becomes her sleeping wear.
I mean, hey, wherever we can showcase the Bet the Board brand, I mean, that always becomes the key. And obviously, Payne, like we do every week, we chat about some of the things we saw, both surprising and disappointing, but wanted to talk about injuries first and foremost. Obviously, anyone who caught the Sunday Night Football game with the Houston Texans saw the Texans lose arguably their two best defensive players for the season. J.J. Watt, and I'm going to butcher it, it was a plateau tibia fracture, and Whitney Mercilus, a torn pectoral. But the list goes on. Odell Beckham Jr. lost for the season with an ankle injury. The receiving corps for the Giants, Brandon Marshall and Sterling Shepard, also maybe expected to miss some time. Chris Conley and Travis Kelce getting banged up in the Chiefs game. Matthew Stafford leaving the Detroit Lions facility with a limp. Devontae Parker, Lane Johnson, Carlos Hyde, Adam Jones, Draker, Patrick, Rob Gronkowski. The list goes on as we start to see the injury bug take hold after NFL Week 5.
For our listeners' sake, they hope the injury list doesn't go on. And after you rattled that off, I don't even know what your question was. What are you asking?
Just
me?
some some of the big ones that you saw, and I guess you start with the Texans. When you lose two key cogs on the defense like that, we talk about it all the time with cluster injuries. You know, what kind of impact does that have the same way that the Giants team, who, you know, they may be a dumpster fire, but if they're down three receivers for their trip Sunday night to Denver, it's not exactly going to be a warm and tingly feeling for the Big Blue Wrecking Crew.
No, that's the biggest thing is the high-end premium injuries and then cluster injuries. So, you know, it's pretty well thought that Watt is a defensive player that's worth close to a point. When you add Merciless to that, probably a combination between the two of about a point and a half. So that is massive, and they both go out very early in that game. And so while the Chiefs continue to win games, you start to pinpoint little things throughout each game, and it's like the ball just keeps rolling their way, so to speak. And those are two massive, massive injuries. So not sure Houston can fully recover, although you look at the division, and again, lots of opportunity within that division. Matthew Stafford will have to be monitored. I know we'll talk about that game in the look-ahead segment a little later on, so I don't want to divulge too much there. Devontae Parker doesn't look overly serious, an ankle injury that he basically caused on his own. Lane Johnson, that's a big one. We know what that Philadelphia offensive line looked like without Lane Johnson last year. They're starting to run the ball much better now that all the cogs are healthy, so that'll be a significant loss if he's out for any extended stretch. Short week, so that's one you're going to want to monitor a little bit.
Kenyon Barner getting touches and coming up big in the special teams game for the Eagles and that resounding 34-7 victory against Arizona yesterday.
Everyone thought Chip was just giving his boy a job.
He looked good, man. He had a burst. He looked like he was definitely able to contribute and give them a little bit of a home run threat there. But disappointing team over the weekend, Payne. I feel like there's so many ways we can go. Do we go with the Browns just being hopeless? The Giants officially mailing in their season at this juncture? The Cardinals mustering a grand total of 7 points and looking ill-equipped to handle pass protection? Do we choose the Steelers with Big Ben turning it over five times and going doom and gloom? Or do we go with the Rams, who had five possessions inside the 20-yard lines, came away with 10 points, and all of a sudden dampering the spirits that all of a sudden they were going to become the greatest show on turf Rams offense that we saw when they used to play in St. Louis?
Those are all good candidates. I don't really care where we start. I mean,
well, you can pick one. We don't have to hit on all of them in great detail.
Your Giants are done, right? Like, let's just put the nail in the
coffin. They're done.
They're done.
Just take the shovel out and start shoveling dirt on. They're done. They're fucking done.
There's going to be no Undertaker-like emergence from the casket there. The Steelers are an easy target, so let's just go there. I mean, Mike Tomlin is inept. I have never been a fan of him, never will be a fan of him. You know, we saw his coaching prowess take center stage a year ago. Where he refused to adapt and adjust to that Patriots offense that's efficient in their short and intermediate passing by playing zone defense. So he's just not very – the game plans are horrible. And then you look this week, and if – not to say I would be a coach, but putting myself in the coach's shoes, if I'm looking at scouting, if I'm looking at film work, I don't know how the game plan against the Jaguars that have the number one defense passing – and the worst rush defense, you would concoct a game plan that has 55 passes and 18 rushes. And a lot of people will be like, oh, they were behind. They were behind. Well, no, like the neutral situations, one score part of that game, he threw the ball 72% of the time in neutral situations. So somehow Tomlin looked at the film and said, hey, let's be pass heavy today, boys. Let's be pass heavy. And it just made zero sense.
This is a little confused. We know Tomlin doesn't always devise the best game plans any more than Bruce Arians does when he goes, we're not going to keep a running back in to try and protect our quarterback. We're going to put Carson Palmer in a body bag so we can go with Drew Stanton. But for all the teams that had piss poor efforts and energy levels, call it what you will, which of the teams kind of impressed you? I mean, the Packers, we've seen it time and time again. Aaron Rodgers, absolutely surgical on the final drive. The Chiefs befuddle us. Finding ways to win football games, getting everything to break their right way. We mentioned the Jaguars defensively. We know they were outgained. Obviously, forced five turnovers, so the defense deserves a ton of credit. The Eagles, I mean, good but not great. And then, of course, Carolina, you have to give them full marks for following up that upset victory against the Patriots going on the road and beating a pesky Lions team.
Well, you know, I think it's easy to transition right to the Jaguars because they were awesome. And I had, you know, the metrics love their defensive secondary, and it was extremely hyped up. this was the true road test, right? Against a passing attack, against an efficient offense, because when you start to break down some of their metrics, you could say, okay, they faced like Tom Savage and Houston was dealing with Hurricane Harvey, so they weren't really fully in. They faced McCown. They faced Flacco. So you're like, okay, yeah, right now number one in defensive pass efficiency, but there's some question marks there. Well, they passed this test with flying colors, and they were fantastic there. Offensively, they're getting the ground game going. They're ninth in successive rush rate. Bortles isn't turning it over as much. That's the positive there. 7 touchdowns just to 4 interceptions. Now, he's not fantastic. He's still not, when you stack him up against other quarterbacks, he's right now graded out in the bottom third, but he's playing average football right now, which is really all you can ask for out of him.
Has Leonard Fournette's development surprised you at all, the numbers he's put up? I mean, he showed some bursts with a long touchdown run yesterday, 180-plus yards. Has he surprised you, the impact he's been able to have on that Jaguars offense overall, or did you kind of expect this coming into the season?
Yes, that is a grown man. That is a grown man right there. And I will tell you this. There are many wide receivers, many offensive weapons that like to stay away from Mitchell. And if you watched this game on a previous run before the long touchdown, he gets outside a little bit, and he is waving the safety, Mitchell, for Pittsburgh to hit him. He is encouraging contact, and he just plows him over. And so, I mean, he's a grown man. When you say things like, hey, the NFL isn't very hard, you got to back that up, and so far he is. And that was what we saw in college, right? It was men amongst boys, and he's fitting in perfectly here for a system, a style that Marone and Coughlin really want to run.
It's been impressive to watch. I will say that getting back to the basics, playing bully football, as you mentioned, Bortles not doing anything tremendous, but as long as you don't turn the football over, it puts you in good standing. And when you mentioned turnovers and some of the expectations, we have the perfect guest to give us his take on what we could expect tonight between the Vikings and Bears. We welcome in a special guest this Monday morning. He was a former NFL wide receiver. He's a co-host of the Waddle and Sylvie Show on WMVP Chicago AM 1000 and a current NFL analyst with ESPN. You can follow him on Twitter at TWaddle87. Tom, thanks for jumping into the fold this morning to talk a little NFL football with us here on Bet the Board.
My pleasure, fellas. Hoping for a new adventure in Chicago with regard to the quarterback position starting tonight.
And before we get to the potential impact of Mitchell Trubisky for the beloved Bears, wanted to get your take on the weekend that was and what you've seen so far. Anything really jump off the page and surprise you from NFL Week 5?
I wouldn't say surprised, but just overly impressed with the consistent great play of the Kansas City Chiefs. They just don't make mistakes on offense. Alex Smith, now that he has some down the field weapons and has some more big play characters in his huddle to work with, they look like the best the AFC has to offer. I think Carson Wentz's development has been very, very fun to watch, very impressive. And obviously Deshaun Watson, a lot of it was done when that game was put away, but you can see the kid still making those same big plays at the professional level that he was obviously known so well for making at the collegiate level. So it's been a lot of good. On the bad side, you know, Big Ben, 5 interceptions. You start asking yourself the question that he was asking himself this offseason: is the game getting away from him a little bit?
You know, Big Ben, I mean, he comes out and says that. We've seen, obviously, plenty of distractions, whether it's Tomlin, some of the national anthem stuff, Antonio Brown's temper tantrum on the field last week in Baltimore. You've been in the locker room. I'm sure you've been around situations like this. It's something that I can't speak to and Payne can't. You know, what's that like, and how much do you take away from a team that, as talented as the Steelers are, that almost appears to be fracturing at the seams without panicking because it still is early October, and they have to be considered front runners in the AFC alongside New England and Kansas City?
Yeah, I mean, it can happen to the best of them. The good thing for Steelers fans and the Steelers organization is they've got a guy, Mike Tomlin, who is as good as there is in terms of getting this team or his team together and having everybody pull on the same end of the rope. You know, you hear the old phrase, once you start talking or thinking about retirement or talking about retirement, you've pretty much retired. I don't know if that's totally the case with with Big Ben. There's a lot of football left. I mean, as bad as they've looked, they're still a 3-2 team in the AFC. They're still the best team in their division. I fully expect that Mike Tomlin's leadership will kind of drag them through this difficult moment and get them pointed in the right direction. But there's a shelf life with all quarterbacks, even the great quarterbacks. At some points, there will be an abrupt change in how they play. I don't know that time has come for Ben, but it's been a collective effort in terms of the underwhelming performances. Le'Veon Bell yesterday was just 47 yards. Maybe we should give the Jacksonville defense a ton of credit as well, but I'm not ready to pronounce the Steelers dead for the 2017 season.
We may have to pick up a copy of Tom Brady's biography and send it over to Big Ben and make sure he can play until he's 45 years of age, as the ageless wonder we saw on Thursday night put together a nice performance for the Patriots. But quarterback seems a logical place to have our discussion, especially in regards to the Bears. And I'll ask you first and foremost, the kind of evolution that the Bears organization has taken, because early in the season, Tom, they said Mike Glennon was going to be the guy. They were going to allow Mitchell Trubisky to learn, take his time. And obviously circumstances have changed, highlighted by Glennon's inability to hang on to the football in that Thursday night loss to the Packers. So can you walk us through the process and how this has kind of come about so quickly to get the rookie quarterback his first start tonight on Monday Night Football?
Well, I think the plan when the season kicked off was that Mike Glennon was going to play. And while his ceiling may not be significantly high, it won't be as low as he has shown through the first four games of this season. The plan all along was to have Mike Glennon play and play well and allow Mitchell Trubisky, who only had 13 starts at the collegiate level, to sit back and watch. That plan obviously had to be scrapped because the game manager wasn't managing the game. And when your game manager is turning the football over and he becomes a large reason why you're losing games, then you're going to have to adjust and make changes. It wasn't all Mike Glennon's fault the first 4 weeks. There's not a lot of talent at the wide receiver position. They've had to shuffle some guys in and out of the offensive line on the interior of that line. But by and large, Mike Glennon is the biggest reason why they had to make this change. So they segue from a guy who has limited athletic ability and is slow to release the football to a kid that still has a lot to learn but brings a different element, a kid that's very athletic, kid that can throw the football into tight windows, and a kid that looks like, I think, is up to the challenge. I don't expect it to be 100% smooth sailing. He's going to see some things he's never seen before, especially with Mike Zimmer putting together a game plan against him tonight with a very, very good Minnesota defense, guys that have playmakers at all three levels. But I think he will give his teammates a bit of a boost, both from an emotional standpoint, and I think physically he'll be able to do some things that Mike Glennon wasn't able to. But the change is one that they didn't want to make when you zoom out and you look at the 2017 season from a big picture perspective, but it was one that they had to make considering how the first quarter of the season went.
How much of this do you think is pressure on the Bears when they see how well, you mentioned Deshaun Watson, his tremendous performance against Kansas City, a lot of those stats coming when the outcome had already been decided. When you look at it, you know, as another NFL franchise, you see a rookie quarterback who was drafted after the guy that you traded up to get within the top three going, all right, maybe it's time that we give our fans a little bit of hope as the season starts to slip away. We throw the kid into the fire and let him try and learn the offense, seeing live bullets out there.
I don't think this decision was influenced at all by what they saw from Deshaun Watson. In fact, I think they made this decision. Remember, they were coming off the loss to Green Bay on a Thursday night. I believe the decision was made the following Friday, and that was prior to Watson having his first really big game. I think it was against the Titans. So it wasn't as if they made the decision after watching Deshaun Watson do what he did 2 weeks ago and then last night. This was a decision made prior to that. And frankly, you have to have confidence in your convictions, and you can't be making decisions based on what other people are doing. I think that is the quickest way to get yourself off track. So I think this is one inside that I think they also, Todd, I think they are pleasantly surprised with how far along Mitchell is. Now, he's not there yet totally, there's so much that goes into being a quarterback at the National Football League level. Coming from college, a lot of these guys are coming in and out of a huddle. They're not calling the plays. They're looking to the sideline. It's a different game, and that's been accentuated more and more as time has gone on. So I think they thought that the learning process was going to take longer, and they weren't going to be as impressed this soon with Mitchell. But I think he has caught the attention of a lot of people, and he just started a while ago. So I think they feel it was a decision to change that had to happen, but I think they're comfortable with it because he's further along than they thought.
Payton, when you look at the Bears changing quarterbacks, I mean, how do professional bettors view the adjustment in overall power numbers from Glennon to Trubisky? Or is it kind of, hey, we're going to take a wait-and-see approach before we do a whole lot to change the Bears and essentially how we handicap and price them going forward?
Yeah, it's definitely a wait-and-see.
Well,
go ahead, Tom.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were looking for me to give you the handicapper's guide.
Well, we'll get to you in a second, Tom. We'll get your handicapper's assessment there. We figure we'll lean on Payne for a little power number evaluation.
No, I mean, I think right now it's a wait-and-see approach. You're looking at Glennon. He was graded out the 27th best quarterback out of 32 qualifiers. So I actually make a slight tick up here, about a point in favor of Trubisky. And Tom nailed it right on the head. When you bring in Glennon as a game manager, not to turn it over, and he's turning it over, but you're also not getting the explosive plays out of him. That's why this changing of the guard takes place. You look at Chicago, 32nd in the NFL in explosive pass plays, just two all season. And I think that's what you're looking for, and that's what you're hoping for out of Trubisky.
Go ahead, Tom, and we'll let you jump in and kind of piggyback that.
No, I was just going to say, listen, this is not my area of expertise. I just look at the film. I don't look at the lines. The biggest point that I would stress is I think that even as a rookie quarterback, he's going to take care of the football better than the guy before him. And that's really where the Bears got in trouble. If you look at the first quarter of their season, they really should have beaten the Falcons in week one at Soldier Field, if not for a couple of opportunities that were missed and slipped through the fingers of his receivers. Mike Glennon would have had an opening day win. The second game against Tampa, that game got completely out of hand because of Mike Glennon's inability to take care of the football. The third game, obviously, they won at Soldier Field against the Pittsburgh Steelers. They turned it over a couple of times, but for the most part, Mike Glennon took care of the football. And then against the Packers on Thursday night, once again, it was all about turnovers. So I think that the Bears will have a better chance of being competitive more consistently, because I do think that the kid, and this sounds strange, that a rookie quarterback will be better at taking care of the football than a veteran. And I say that lightly because I know that Mike Glennon doesn't have a ton of games on his resume. But it's unusual to think that a rookie quarterback is going to be more reliable and more dependable taking care of the football. But to me, that will be the biggest issue going forward. Yes, I think he's more capable of explosion plays. I think that he'll do some things that will open up that running game. They'll get him out on the edge. But most importantly, I think that the kid will do a better job taking care of the football. And you just cannot win, nor can you stay close in this league if you're not taking care of the ball.
Now, before we get to the full breakdown on tonight's game and just kind of get your thoughts there, when you look at it before Trubisky ever takes a snap at the NFL level, what would you see as a successful debut, not only tonight, but for the remainder of the season to go, all right, the Bears finally have a potential franchise quarterback that they can build around. Now it's up to us as an organization to get the pieces in place. But what do you need to see from the young quarterback to make sure that he's progressing the way he needs to over the next 12 games or so?
To me, it's more about what the eye test tells you than statistics. Again, I think it will be taking care of the football. We'll look at the turnover numbers for sure. And even for veteran quarterbacks, 2-1 touchdown interception ratio is a must. You want to complete 63% to 65% of your passes. That's your floor as well in this league at this time that promotes throwing. I just think that the eye test will be the best way to discern whether or not you really have something that you can build with. And a lot of his success or failure will also be a direct result of how the offensive coordinator, Dow Loggins, puts him in positions to take care of what he does well or take advantage of what he does well or doesn't. So there will be a lot of players that will have influence on who Mitchell Trubisky is. But I think we'll look at some of the splash plays. We'll look at how well he takes care of the football. And the eye test will just tell you whether or not you can build with him. because let's face it, as I mentioned earlier, this receiving core is not very good. It's not very deep. I think he'll make them a little bit better. But if you're looking at pure statistics to kind of wow you, I don't think that will be the case by the end of this regular season. I think it'll be a kind of a collection of what you see versus, you know, what the stats tell you.
And when we look at tonight's game, of course, the Bears, a 3.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total on this game, 40.5, Tom. Break it all down for us. You can pick the game if you'd like, but you don't have to. We won't put you on the spot. How do you see things playing out at Soldier Field tonight when the Bears play host to the Vikings, who most likely should have Sam Bradford under center for the first time in a few weeks?
Yeah, my head says it's very difficult to win with a rookie quarterback against a Mike Zimmer defense that has playmakers at all three levels. I mean, they get after the quarterback. The last time they were on the field, they sacked Matthew Stafford 6 times. Their linebackers are fast, so they'll be able to get to the edge with Mitchell if, in fact, they run a lot of play-action pass or some quarterback runs. They're secondary. They're very good at the cornerback position and at the safety position. So if the kid is off target or he's fooled by certain things, there's a group back there that can take the ball away. So this is going to be quite a challenge for them. I do know, to get into your world, that the Bears are 14-2 the last 16 times they've played the Vikings at Soldier Field. And I do think that Trubisky will give this team a lift. So my head says it'd be very difficult to go with a rookie quarterback in his first start against a top five defense. But my heart says he's going to give this team the lift that they need. So I picked this game the Bears would win 23-20. Again, I'm not great at the prognostication, but I do believe that we'll see a team that plays with a little extra giddy up in their step.
Don't worry about it. We won't hold you accountable for the final score prediction. We'll temper our listeners' expectation, have them running to the window to bet the Bears on the money line tonight in the debut of Mitchell Trubisky. But, Tom, thanks so much. I know it's a busy day in Chicago, not only with the Bears playing on Monday night, but obviously the Cubs playoff game. So thanks for jumping on with us today. Really appreciate it.
Anytime, guys. It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That was Tom Waddle, and you can follow him on Twitter at TWADDLE87, former wide receiver with the Chicago Bears turned NFL analyst. Payne, we'll get to our thoughts on the Bears and Vikings a little bit later in the show. Interesting to get Tom's perspective. Clearly, he doesn't quite see Mike Tomlin the same way that you and I do.
No, and I think he's probably, and this, we've kind of had this with our past couple guests, right? You can tell which guys are players' coaches, and clearly Tomlin's one of those guys. Dusty Dvorak, what did he say? He loved Lovie Smith. So you can tell which coaches are players' coaches, and sometimes, especially in this day and age where guys like to quit a little bit, that's why a lot of these players' coaches are being hired. But we still see that the elite top-tier coaches, they rule still with an iron fist. The inmates don't run the asylum.
Well, I mean, like we talk about all the time, and whether it's business, whether it's football, or any other industry that a lot of our listeners are in, if you can't do the little things the right way, you're never going to be able to successfully execute the big things.
No doubt about that.
So, I mean, that pertains to football, any other walks of life. Just make sure you get the small stuff right, because otherwise the foundation you try and build your empire on will continue to crumble from the inside. Perfect segue, Payne, into some look-ahead numbers. We're the Houston Texans, 9.5-point favorites at BetOnline.ag, total 44, as they play host to the rapidly imploding and lack of improvement Cleveland Browns. What the hell are sportsbooks going to do with this team that continues to get in its own way? Can't beat opponents that you figured that they might have great opportunities against early in the season.
I'm going to stay away from the Seinfeld reference here that I gave you via text.
We need Seinfeld references. You can fire it away if you'd like. You can fire it.
No, I will we'll pause on that. Well, you know,
all right.
I think people will be able to kind of gather what the quote was. But we've questioned early on in the season why Cody Kessler wasn't the guy. He was fantastic last year with what he had. A lot of the efficiency metrics were fantastic. And I think there's going to be, you know, a big question again if Kevin Hogan isn't named the starter this week. Kaiser right now is inept. I watched the beginning part of that game. He has 2 crucial turnovers inside the Jets' 5-yard line in the first half. They make the switch.
Awful.
Yeah, they make the switch to Hogan. He puts 14 points on the board. 3 of his 4 drives, They were sustained drives, 86 yards, 75 yards, 72 yards. Hogan completes 84% of his passes, has a 122 rating. There is no debate on who the quarterback should be here, and it should be Kevin Hogan. So it'll be interesting to see if they start him this week. I will tell you this. We were posturing all week to get Cleveland as a tiny little dog in the first half. And those hooks popped. I never did it. But man, would that have been an epic bad beat, getting two possessions inside the five-yard line, fumbling them both. Zane Gonzalez misses a 37-yarder, misses a 52-yarder, and then the Jets bang home a 57-yarder at the break. So that would have been a tough beat there.
I mean, there's got to finally be some value with the Browns. I mean, we talked about it. I think we were texting trying to figure out who the hell was going to be out there healthy and able to contribute in the passing game for the Browns. But you look at them defensively, Myles Garrett in limited snaps, looked the part of a first overall pick. I think we're going to see steady improvement from him. Any idea when Jamie Collins may be back with this team to try and give them another cog at the linebacker position?
Potentially when he cares. I don't think he's going to be fighting through many injuries this year to play.
I mean, video games do tend to take away a lot of time. It probably doesn't help with those flashing lights.
He got his money. He is not in a winning culture. That is a culture he is not used to. And so, I mean, he'll get out there and play when he's 100%. He's not going to be fighting through anything at this stage.
Well, a player that may have to fight through a game at this point in the season, Matthew Stafford, looked to be nicked up when he was leaving the team facility, as we mentioned towards the top of the show, has seen this number move a little bit. Payne, right now, New Orleans is a 3.5-point favorite. Lay $1.15 at betonline.ag. Total in this game, 51. Some four starting to pop in the market. And we look at the look-ahead number for this. The Saints were projected as right around a field goal favorite. Do you agree with this move, regardless of Stafford not being... If Stafford was 100%, do you agree with this moving off of the key number three?
Probably. I mean, the Stafford thing's pretty big. So, you know, that's partly it. Saints are clearly getting healthier. You know, some questions on the offensive line, some questions in the secondary. That bye week certainly helped some things. The young parts on their defense are going to continue to improve as the year moves forward. And then you get a decent little spot here, aside from the bye week, and aside from a Lions team that we don't think is very good. You got a little home revenge here. The Lions went in to New Orleans in December last year and won 28-13. So there's a lot of things to like here for the New Orleans Saints.
Moving on down the board, a number that's really taken off from a look-ahead perspective to where it currently sits. It's the Washington Redskins, 9.5-point home favorites coming off their bye week, playing host to the San Francisco 49ers. No total right now at betonline.ag. Look-ahead number for this pain, closer to a touchdown. You have to wonder what the 49ers have left in the tank, playing back-to-back overtime games on the road, now traveling all the way across the country to take on a rested Redskins side.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if San Francisco, I mean, I don't think we've figured it out yet. I can probably send a feeler. I don't know. I mean, it would make sense if they just stayed out east.
I would have to think that was the case. I can't imagine that Kyle Shanahan is going to take his team back across the country, having played the Cardinals, losing in overtime, and then playing the Colts in another heartbreaker.
And I think you nailed it, right? This is actually a spot I had circled before the year. I'd sent you a text a couple weeks ago, like, hey, be looking for this one. And, you know, things got worse. Schedule makers did the Niners no favors, as you alluded to. Third road game in as many weeks. Redskins off a bye. And what makes it worse is San Francisco's played 10 quarters the last 2 weeks, and they lost both in agonizing fashion. So, you know, this is Washington or pass. Wish I was able to nibble the look ahead at -7. That would have been nice. I think, you know, if you're a teaser player, you probably find the spots.
I was waiting for it.
And get under the touchdown and a field goal.
I was waiting for that to sniff out a little early week teaser leg with the Washington Redskins. We talked about this game a little bit on last week's podcast, and of course, the situation never seems to unfold, Payne, the way we draw it up. Right now, Jacksonville, a 2.5-point favorite, lay $1.20 on the favorite at betonline.ag, total 43.5. The Rams come invading, the Rams fresh off of their loss against the Seahawks, a game that I thought they really won on the box score. This number, look ahead, price had the Jaguars a pick 'em, so you've seen the market correct itself a bit, given the Jaguars win in a situational spot, probably not working in the Rams' favor.
This, a lot of the the spots this year haven't been great or they've been taken away. So this shiny spot lost some luster, obviously, with the Jaguars winning on the road by 100 over our top power-rated team in the league. And then the Rams kind of soiled themselves, came up short there against the division rival Seahawks. So this would have been the two-handed shove here at Pick'em if the Rams had won like they won in the box score, if Jacksonville didn't perform so fantastically on the road. I still think there's probably some value in this spot, but it's nothing like I had hoped.
Nope. Sometimes the best laid plans in this business often do not come to fruition, and it becomes a kick in the proverbial nuts when we look at some of these numbers. So a game that we may revisit on Thursday, but for right now, not quite the same scenario, Pick'em versus laying 2.5, especially with the $1.20 price tag out there. This number, Payne, we've seen major movement on. Tampa, a 2-point road favorite as they head out to the desert to take on the Arizona Cardinals. Total in this game, 44.5 at betonline.ag. Look ahead numbers from the Westgate Superbook had the Cardinals listed as 2.5-point favorites, but there may not be a team in the league taking on more water under the radar right now than the Arizona Cardinals. No.
And, you know, there's some perception in this line, obviously. You know, one team hangs tough with the Patriots, couldn't kick a field goal. If they could, they likely win. That's on Thursday night in front of the entire, you know, country. The other team doesn't show up against the Eagles. They get blown out. You know, but I will say this. Aside from the perception, the situation here is with the Buccaneers. They have circled this spot. The game has been one they've talked about, if you've done some reading. They went into Arizona last year and lost 40-7.
That was ugly. That was ugly.
So, you know, aside from some perception, aside from, you know, Doug Martin coming back and looking extremely healthy, you get the revenge situation. The Cardinals also have a trip to London on deck. So there's a lot of situation in this number.
Are the Cardinals going to do anything to try and sort out some of their offensive line and ineptitude, or are they just going to let Carson Palmer sit back there and continue to become a human being?
Yeah, I mean, they don't grow on trees, but yes, I agree that you should have some type of running back in there chipping, some type of tight end in there being that sixth offensive lineman that we've seen a lot of teams resort to this year when they're outmanned on the offensive line. So far, though, that is not Bruce Arians' MO, right? Because when you have to bring in an extra running back, when you have to bring in an extra tight end, you can't run, you know, just straight go routes five at a time. Yeah, that's just what he likes to do. He's too aggressive for my liking.
This team got old, and they got old in a hurry. Did. And with no threat of a ground game right now, I mean, it's really difficult to watch them try and move the ball.
And there's not a lot of, you know, we kind of tipped our hand on this with Adam Gase a little bit, who likes to be aggressive. There's not a lot of the underneath stuff. There's not a lot of the quick passing. Arians takes his shots, and when the offensive line was decent a few years back and they had more weapons outside, it looked fantastic, and the analytics guys loved him for taking those shots, and that is how you should play to a certain extent. But when you throw in the film, there's certain times where Carson Palmer's passing up the short route and just chucking deep, you know, these 50-50 balls. Something has to change there.
That works in our annual Turkey Bowl. I can't imagine it's going to work to win a whole lot of games at the NFL level.
No.
Sunday Night Football, this may be a game that's better left for the DVR. The Denver Broncos, 11-point favorites at betonline.ag. Total at 40.5 as they play host to the winless New York Football Giants. Look ahead line here, Payne had the Broncos pegged as 6-point favorites. It's rare that I'll advocate for double digits still offering value, but there's no way that I'm personally going to the window with a Giants ticket right now. What say you about how to handicap the Big Blue moving forward?
It keeps going up. Keep sticking up.
If you look at things on so many levels, I mean, this is a horrific matchup because you can't throw the ball against Denver. You can't protect your quarterback if you're the Giants. And oh, by the way, things aren't going to get any better with the Broncos coming in rested off a bye. Like, I don't know where this number ultimately closes. And when we see resistance and at least a little bit of a nibble on the Giants with the points.
You nailed it. Cluster injuries. You know, we know Beckham and Dwayne Harris are 100% out. Let's see the timetable on Shepard and Marshall. I think Marshall probably the likelier of two to go this week against his old foes. It's just a bad, bad matchup, right? That defensive line versus the Giants O-line with a week to prepare. Vance Joseph is a wizard. He's going to be scheming up new ways that, you know, to get pressure on the quarterback. And we know if you put pressure on Eli, that game's over. And it can get ugly quick. and you're not going to have a lot of separation with potentially backup receivers going against that secondary. A lot of scary things there.
When you when we talk about totals, and I know a lot of times people look and they try and figure out how they can reverse engineer some of our thought process in terms of, you know, two good defenses are matched up. I mean, does it ever worry you when you handicap games if you don't think an offense is going to be able to do anything because of the short fields and or turnovers that can be created as a result?
Oh, that's absolutely the biggest concern when you start looking at totals this low, right? At 40, 40 and a half, a special team score, a defensive score can really, really hinder what could be a great play. And when you have to factor Eli in this situation, that's exactly what he's prone to do, turning the ball over. Probably going to create a short field or two, maybe even a defensive score. So that's the concerning element here.
What about, real quick, when it comes to the Giants and some of their defensive metrics, for me, they don't pass the eye test. I won't claim to have the same quantifiable analysis. How much different does this defense look on paper for you guys versus where they were last season ago?
Yeah, it's not even close. I mean, this was a defense that we were high on coming into last year. We were able to parse out some of their preseason stats, ones versus ones, and they were fantastic. They ended up being the number two defense overall in efficiency this year. I'm not quite sure what's gone on. I know they lose a guy or two in the interior of that defensive line. They've had some injuries at linebacker. Janaris Jenkins missed a game. But right now, it's not the same defense. They can't get off the field on third down. Right now, looking at this, not very good. I don't understand what's going on. Spagnuolo, we know, runs a complex system. Everyone should have grasped it by now. They seem to grasp it in year one. I'm not sure why it's not translating this year. That's pretty scary to me. So they've really regressed in that regard. They're not stopping the run is the biggest factor, though.
And last thing before we stop the piling on of the New York Giants, Coach McAdoo going to survive the firing squad this offseason?
We'll say this. You know, that organization's pretty loyal to its coaches. Now, you throw up an 0-16, that loyalty probably goes out the window. They're going to have to start winning some games. And what makes things a little worse is the Jets, an unexpected 3-2. Now, regardless of who they've played, the great situations they've had, there's three wins in the win column. And little brother is making you look even worse now.
It's definitely worth paying attention to. And BetOnline.ag going to have some winless props up there should you want to bet against the likes of the Giants, the Browns, and some of these lovable losers out there. So encourage you to check some of those out. From look-ahead numbers pain to our Monday movie review, Tom Cruise, American Made. I mean, I actually thought the movie was pretty damn good. Entertaining watch. I know you said I was a little bit twisted describing it as a comedy, which probably wasn't perceived as such, but that's kind of how I felt.
It was oddly done.
If you had done it, because you knew the story, and I'll admit, you know, hey, I like to think of myself as a history buff, had no idea who Barry Seals was, and for those folks that don't know the storyline, Barry Seals, I won't even give it away, that's the name of the lead character that Tom Cruise plays. So you said that there were a lot of things you would have changed if you were in the director's chair for this one.
Well, first of all, I don't know if Tom Cruise is Barry Seal. Like, Tom Cruise is this pretty fit and cut up dude, and Barry Seal was extremely overweight. So it kind of threw it off for me a little bit. You know, listen, Barry Seal is a guy who kind of took advantage of situations that he had been put in. And in the end, you know, the higher ups, the people of importance kind of put him in a bad situation, and ultimately, it didn't lead to good things. I will say this, though. I would, if you haven't seen Cocaine Cowboys yet, which is one of the most fantastic documentaries ever made, I would suggest seeing that over this. That probably gives you a better idea of who Barry Seal really is. But I will say this, like, that movie portrayed the government at the end of not really giving him any help. The reality is, I mean, he was highly watched, and he was actually given an offer for witness protection that he refused. So, you know.
Yeah, you leave a little bit of those details out, just like watching watching Moneyball with no reference to Mark Mulder or Tim Hudson. Why let the truth get in the way of a good story?
Moneyball's good, though.
I did like it. I mean, Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill did an excellent job. They just left out a lot of key details because last I checked, the Oakland A's weren't winning games because of Scott Hatterberg's on-base percentage.
No.
Nope, not for me. This week, what do we have on the docket? I mean, I looked. I mean, is it Blade Runner? Are we going to take the jump into sci-fi? Oof. Blade Runner 2049.
What's out there? I think that's.
I didn't see much.
I am clearly not a sci-fi guy, but if we have to go that way.
Well, I was going to throw out, like, I mean, we're getting closer to Halloween, so I didn't know if I should throw out we should force you to go see it since the last time we did a horror movie review. It is not. I see what you did there. Hold on. Let me pull up the trusty movies that I have in front of me. So I got Blade Runner, American Made.
The Mountain Between Us sounds really, really. I don't even want to click that.
Kingsman, The Golden Circle.
You didn't see the first one, though.
No, I didn't see that one. Victoria and Abdul. I don't even know what the hell that one's about. Battle of the Sexes. Billie Jean King and Riggs. God, tennis match. There's that out there. I don't think that's going to get my movie theater dollar. Let's see what else we got here. Hold on.
All right, let's do Blade Runner.
Well, I mean, hold on a second. We can go through the thought process here. I know the listeners are glued to their seats.
There's not much going on.
Try and figure out. My Little Pony, the movie, the Lego Ninjago.
That's one that you'll probably see on your own, so I'll let you enjoy that.
The Lego Ninjago movie, I don't even know. I mean, I guess that's the one with Jackie Chan. I feel like I've seen those 1,000 times. Till Death Do Us Part with Taye Diggs and Stephen Bishop.
You may need a little motivation, maybe Stronger.
I mean, Stronger is a viable option. We could do Stronger.
The problem is I only see a couple showings, so that could be
dicey.
I
think it's a little bit limited. There's Mother with Jennifer Lawrence. You know, maybe that one's one that we explore.
Not happening.
All right, not happening.
Let's go Blade Runner. Let's just make this easy.
All right, apparently we're going Mother. So, as always, if you have some recommendations for us, feel free to toss them out there. Always happy to hear what our loyal Bet the Board listeners have to say in terms of how we should invest our time on the silver screen. But bigger things at hand, and it is the Monday Night Football game. You heard Tom Waddle's thoughts about the Bears' progression to getting Mitchell Trubisky into that starting role and some of the internal and external pressures that may or may not apply to getting the rookie out there sooner rather than a lot of people assumed. As always, the big game breakdowns on Mondays and Thursdays, courtesy of the American Gaming Association and their Sports Betting America Coalition. The American Sports Betting Coalition aims to educate, advocate, empower, and deliver those looking to try and push for legalization. Nearly 2 in 3 Americans believe regulated sports betting allows local economies to benefit. For more information, go to sportsbettingamerica.com. A lot of great information there about all the things the AGA is doing to bring legalized wagering to an area by you. Monday Night Football pain. The Vikings, 3.5-point road favorites at Soldier Field. Total in this game, 40.5 at betonline.ag. We talked about the change in quarterback. The Vikings' struggles at Soldier Field are well documented. Danny Trevathan missing to anchor the Chicago Bears linebacking core. Where do we go to begin breaking down tonight's match?
Well, I think it was awesome that Tom came on. And the silver lining that I kind of took from that was, former wide receiver, and obviously he's been in the locker room, but with a former receiver telling you that a quarterback switch is going to instill more confidence, that it might actually have these guys being amped up a little bit more, that they're looking forward to this, I think lends itself pretty well. And I think that's the biggest component when we tell you guys to do your reading. Everyone can read the same things. Everyone can hear the same things. How do you interpret it? What do you take from it? That's what separates professional bettors from the rest. And that was my biggest takeaway, is that a guy that's been in the locker room, a guy that has played the position and has dealt with numerous quarterbacks, says, hey, this is uplifting. And so far, the market tends to agree with that. I know we've seen a shift from 3 out to 3.5. Just because of Sam Bradford being announced in. But as soon as the market ticked up to 4, there was immediate resistance. And as we record this right now, we're looking at soft 3.5 pretty much everywhere in the market.
What does this game do in terms of the Vikings offense? Not only will we see potentially a change from Case Keenum to Sam Bradford, but no Dalvin Cook out there. How much different do the Vikings look on that side of the ball with those two changes at some pretty important positions?
I'm being generous in my estimation. I think I believe I'm low on this. I have Bradford worth a full 3 points. He's better than Keenum. That's what my gut says, especially with Dalvin Cook down. Now, the question is, how healthy is Bradford? That becomes the biggest question when you evaluate this. And again, we saw the market go from 3 out to 4. 4 was the number that that really attracted some Bears money. Is it one shot to the knee and then he's out again? Is it something where a lineman is backpedaling into him and just nips his knee and he's done? I don't know. The information around Bradford has been pretty sketchy. And as you know, it sounds like a lot of the local media has been fed inaccurate information.
Yeah, they've been fed a whole lot of garbage.
So I mean, Zimmer's been tight to the vest with this. And I can tell you, we've poked around and it's not much is being said here. But, you know, the one thing that does scare me here. And
just one thing.
And you touched on this a little bit with the Trevathan suspension. It comes at a really bad time. So you were already down Jarrell Freeman and now you're out Trevathan, but you're also without your other starting outside linebacker in Willie Young. And now you're without your fourth guy, your depth guy in Kiwakowski, I believe his name is. So this is a MASH unit at this point. And Jerick McKinnon, I know everyone's raving about Latavius Murray. Latavius Murray's going to get a bulk of the carries. He stinks. Now, maybe he shows out on Monday Night Football, but this is a guy that averaged about 4 yards per carry behind a fantastic offensive line in Oakland a year ago. There's a reason he's not in Oakland anymore. He's a power back. They said, we want a power back, and they went and got Marshawn Lynch. They didn't think he was powerful enough. And this is a much different offensive line for Minnesota than what he had to run behind last year. Now, it is an improved unit, but it's not anything that he got to run behind last year. He's not overly explosive. His vision isn't very good. I mean, it was one of the worst contracts in football this year. I have a feeling this happens every time that we've seen these issues at running back, right? Like Jerick McKinnon's only going to get this many touches. He's a vital part of our special teams. And then Jerick McKinnon ends up getting more touches than just about anybody. And
I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it having benched Doug Martin in fantasy on Thursday that may ultimately cost me a week about running backs and the touches and the expected playing time that some of these guys are going to get.
And in a one-game sample size, I could be completely wrong. But what we've seen over the last two or three seasons, and there's my dog barking. She loves the Bears tonight, apparently.
Live dog. We got a live dog on this one. Live dog on the podcast.
What we have seen is McKinnon is a much better option, and he is a matchup nightmare. And so I can only envision a guy like Sam Bradford, who's uber accurate, picking apart that decimated linebacker core with Jerick McKinnon over the middle. So we'll see how that transpires, but that so far scares me a little bit.
When we look at the total pain, 40.5 the number, kind of hasn't really budged from right where it's open. 40, I guess, the number at betonline.ag, but plenty of 40s out there. Can you make a case for one side being more compelling for another? I mean, does the unknown work towards overbetters when the Vikings have very little footage of Mitchell Trubisky? But again, as Tom Waddle alluded to, and I know you've mentioned, it's a Mike Zimmer-led defense against a quarterback that has never taken a snap in an NFL regular season game.
The total is intriguing because I think you're going to have two things here. One, there's not a lot of tape on Trubisky, as you alluded to. Three, it becomes a much different game plan when you have to account for a guy that's mobile and can run. It's going to allow your receivers to have a little bit more space. There's going to be a linebacker that's being taken away in coverage. So that's certainly going to help a little bit. One thing that we have seen, well, the weapons outside are weak, although I think Wheaton coming around a little bit, getting acclimated, should help things just a little bit. The running back situation has been very good there. They've, between Cohen and Howard, they're actually one of the most explosive running back tandems in the league. So you're going to rely on that ground game. Zimmer, I dug into this a little bit. Rookies right now actually are 8-7 against Zimmer so far. But when you dig into the numbers a little bit, they're not overly impressive. They're winning games. Now, granted, he was with the Bengals, so that has a lot to do with these numbers in terms of record. But when you start to sniff the stats out, you know, the rookies completed about 58% of their passes, had 6.8 yards per pass attempt against Zimmer defenses. I was of the mindset that said, hey, this could be a tough spot. Monday night, big stage, under the lights, everybody watching against Zimmer. This probably isn't the spot. And then I started to look at the schedule a little bit here, and I said, hey, if you don't do it now, when do you do it? And, you know, this is probably the right spot in a mini bye, right? You had the extended week off the Thursday game because, you know, if you waited until the bye week, you're talking week 10 and John Fox's job is clearly on the line. So if Trubisky even resembles a competent quarterback, if he resembles the quarterback of the future, that's something John Fox can go into with negotiating, saying, hey, that's me. I brought in this guy. I brought in our future. And now you're not going to let me ride off into the sunset with him. So I think he's going to buy himself some time here if Trubisky looks competent.
Well, at least there's a little more hope for Mitchell Trubisky fans and Bear fans alike than what we're seeing in Cleveland with DeShone Kizer, who doesn't appear to be the answer to ending all of the Browns'
misery. Not overly surprising.
No, not in the least. But I guess, you know, to the Browns' credit, not to, you know, go back to a different point, it was a second-round pick. They kind of probably knew that, all right, there might be high risk, high reward here. Clearly, there was much more risk in that equation. I'm guessing from the sounds of it then, no real strong way to try and get to the window from primetime tonight, either side or total.
I don't love it. I can tell you where the professional money is going to come in, and it's going to be on the dog. The question is, how high does this tick up? You're looking at about a 70-10 ticket split here in favor of the road favorite.
Where's the other 20% coming in if it's a 70-10 split?
Did I say 70-10? I said 70-30, I thought.
70-30. That works.
Did I say 70-10?
Yeah, you did say 70-10. I know it. Monday mornings are tough for you, I know, so I like to try and help out when I can to lend you a lifeline.
I do appreciate that.
Do what I can. It's not much, but I help.
I don't, man, if this gets back to four, certainly there is going to be probably an appetite for the dog. What does scare me a little bit is the explosive passing offense of Minnesota. It's number one in the NFL, and we know Chicago dead last in that category. So it could be one of these games where it looks like a stalemate, and then all of a sudden one, two explosive plays, and you have Chicago playing catch-up. But past history, there's a reason professionals are on the dog here. At four, it might get a value bet out of me, but I just don't know if we get back to four.
The way the market's trending right now, it looks more likely that we're going to get to juice three than to four. But we know the public does have their say in some of these standalone games, so it'll be interesting to watch. But let's put it this way, that we will take our winnings from the weekend. We will move on to greener pastures and look for something to try and offer up come Thursday as we preview all of the NFL Week 6. Contest entries, you guys continue to blow us away with some of these performances thus far. It may take 80% to win the first ever football free roll for Bet the Board.
I'm starting to think, well, we know because we advertise it on this podcast. I'm starting to think everyone's just betting our sides.
Well, I mean, I was joking. I was actually sitting watching football. I was away from the man cave this weekend for a family event, sitting with my dad. And I said, you know, we may have to jack some of these numbers up. I mean, how cruel a twist of fate would it have been if we tell people that the Bengals are our best investment at Moneyline or -3, and we hang the Bengals -4.5 in the contest if everybody wanted to try and tail.
I will say some pretty crazy performances so far. I think our contestants are far outdoing what's going on in the super contest at this point. So, man, 80%. Everyone's killing it right now.
We like to think that our listeners are a little bit smarter, a little bit sharper than the general public out there. That's 3 to 4 years of an advanced degree in handicapping, picking up a lot of the lessons that Payne has taught us over those years. Again, we'll be back with you on Wednesday, as we always are. College football preview on the docket. Doesn't appear to be an overly attractive slate there. Thursday, with all things NFL Week 6, Dave Mason will join us for both of those shows. In the meantime, you can follow Payne on Twitter, at Payne Insider. You can follow me there, at Todd Furman. Special thanks to ESPN radio host and former Chicago Bear Tom Waddle for giving us his thoughts on tonight's big game between the Bears and Vikings. Payne, any parting shots before we reconvene about 48 hours from now?
Nothing. I got nothing.
Nothing. Go to the website, bettheboardpodcast.com. Check out those t-shirts. Buy yourself 1, 2, 3.
They'll ship tomorrow.
I don't care. You can buy out the whole standing inventory. You'll have them by the end of the week. And as we said, it's a scientifically proven fact that when you wear Bet the Board t-shirts on game days, you win 99.9% more than someone who's not wearing that. Regardless of what you do on tonight's game, if it's playoff baseball that keeps you in action throughout the day, I know Payne and I will be glued to the Yankees-Indians pivotal game
four. What time is that?
Hopefully, that game goes at 7 o'clock Eastern. Okay. And while we were on the podcast, we did see a number get posted there, Luis Severino, listed as a prohibitive $1.57 favorite right now at betonline.ag. First pitch there, 4:05 on Fox Sports 1. But quadruple header in baseball, plenty of things to whet that wagering appetite. In the meantime, best of luck, and hopefully we'll see you at the windows.